What is up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 146. This episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that gives us a little kickback and, of course, helps the podcast keep on going. With me, as always, is Derek. What's up, Derek?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just sitting in the basement, avoiding the heat out there. Late summer blast here, kind of like last year. I believe it was like this last year a bit.
Yeah, I remember we were able to get some last minute wakeboarding trips in towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
So, definitely. Yeah, a little heat wave, which we really shouldn't complain about, but it's a little overbearing, especially if you're running computer equipment. Yeah. A lot of it.
Trying to do a little.
You're having trouble trying to keep stuff cool here, but. But yeah, that's kind of what's going on for us in the East Coast. But hopefully for the rest of you guys listening, it isn't as bad. But we'll start off with some pretty cool products. One super cool product that it's just awesome. If you're doing photo or video editing, or even like if you're a hardcore gamer and you want to take your games with you and you have a laptop that obviously doesn't have a super big a hard drive, this could be a game drive for you as well. It is the Patriots, I guess you would call it Evolver. I think that's what
yeah, I think I would definitely
there.
Say Evolver.
It is their Thunderbolt 3 portable solid-state drive. So a lot of the solid-state drives we reviewed in the past, portable ones, are USB 3 or USB 3.1, which gives you super fast speed, between 400 and, 550 megabytes per second. But now we move into Thunderbolt 3 connection, which is super fast, and it just enables such fast transfer and everything like that. The thing is that your device, especially your mobile device, your laptop, needs to have that Thunderbolt 3 connection. While it is a lot more prevalent, there's still a lot of laptops that don't have it, and you might mistaken a USB 3.1 Type-C for a Thunderbolt 3 connector as well. So
it's the same connector, right? Like the same port. It's just not the wire. It's not wired the same.
Yeah. So it is a Thunderbolt 3 connection. It's a Thunderbolt 3 Type-C connection. It's not a USB 3.1 Type-C connection.
Right.
But the actual connector is the same. So the big thing that they were trying to say is make sure your laptop has the Thunderbolt 3 connectivity. You should see it, and if you're buying a high performance laptop, you'll know if it has Thunderbolt 3 or not, because that's a huge selling point for a lot of those laptops and ultrabooks.
Yeah, it's probably a significant part of the price too.
Yeah, it's a big part of the price because of the speed that you're going to get. This drive gave us read and write speeds of around 1600 megabytes a second read and 1000 megabytes a second write, which is pretty awesome for a drive you can fit in your pocket and take with you.
It's legit for an inboard drive, let alone a transportable storage device.
Yeah, so what makes this really great for a lot of different reasons. One, especially if you're shooting in 4K, if you're somebody who's shooting video, offloading stuff and transferring it between systems, this makes it super easy. I was just on a trip yesterday, and with 4K, I think I shot close to 60 gigs of footage, to make a 3 to 5 minute movie. So you need the speed to do this. I primarily now, for the past year, I've used the USB 3.1 SSDs for pulling stuff off.
Which is still pretty good.
But this obviously takes it to another level. It's super small. It's made out of aluminum or metal per se. I think it's steel, but it's just a drive that can take a beating and it can fit in your pocket. And if you're a gamer, you could use this as your game drive at home and with your portable device. So your home computer has the Type-C, the Thunderbolt 3 Type-C connection, so you can do that, and then you can just unplug it and then take it with you on your trip or to the office or whatever may be, and you can have all your games at super fast speed, so you don't have those annoying loading times. It's something that if you're using a SSD, you don't really realize them anymore, but you won't have any loading times or anything like that. So,
right.
Just a great, great little drive. What was really interesting about this drive, just from a product standpoint, is that on the actual box, there's no Patriot logo at all. And on the product, the only Patriot logo is on the back. So I don't know if they just were not trying to the people to think this is a Patriot product. I'm not exactly sure.
Fail on the marketing side.
Yeah, so you know, if I was Patriot, I would want my name at least on the front of this drive, and on the packaging at some point, somewhere. But it's not on the packaging at all, which is weird. Which, you know, if you're a fan of Patriot, you wouldn't even know this is a Patriot product if you saw it at the store. Yeah. So, but besides that, it's a great drive. It's super fast. It is the fastest portable SSD we've ever tested. Samsung, which we'll talk about later in the podcast, just released theirs, their Thunderbolt 3 drive, and you'll see a lot of Thunderbolt 3 drives coming out this year. But yeah, just a really fast drive. The only thing this doesn't have is any software, and the biggest thing you want software for is the smart erase. Somebody gets a hold of this drive, they can obviously take your information. So there's no password protection or encryption on this, and there's no secure erase feature either. So those are two things that are missing. But I think that we talked about this last week off the podcast. But, you know, this is a product that it's expensive. The one terabyte version is $439.99. So it's 42 cents per gigabyte. So it is expensive. Yeah. But if you this is a product that you know you're going to need. If whatever you're doing.
Yeah, you already know that you need this. Like, we're not convincing you. It's you are doing those massive file transfers already, and you're hating life every time you're doing it. So you know that this is going to, it's going to speed up everything for you. It's actually, this device will pay for itself in with time, essentially. So
yeah, I 100% agree. It's just one of those things that if you know you're going to need it, it will pay for itself in the time that you save with the transfer and everything like that.
And maybe you just want a really cool drive. Maybe you don't have a use for it, but you want a really fast, cool drive, and you got the port for it. Well, why not?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, most Ultrabooks now, especially the non-budget ones, will all have a Thunderbolt 3 Type-C connection now, which is super nice.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is, what's also nice about this drive, which I didn't mention, which most USB 3 and 3.1 drives have as well, is there's no external power needed. So you just have one cable that powers it and is your data connection as well. So you don't need to carry a whole lot with you, just this drive and the small cable, and that's it.
Nice.
So yeah, it's just super fast, super awesome.
Good for them being like first to market, essentially. They are, right? I don't think there is another Thunderbolt 3 portable drive, is there?
Well, Samsung announced theirs this past week.
But they've just announced you're already testing.
Yeah, this has been out for a while. Yeah. Or not a while, but a couple months. So yeah. I think they were the first to market to actually release. Yeah. So, yeah. And inside, if you guys are wondering, inside is an M.2 NVMe drive. It's not a normal SSD. I mean, it is an NVMe drive in there.
Okay.
So that's basically what it is. And you have the little controller in there that allows it to, you know, talk over the cable. To your computer, obviously. Right. So yeah, it's just a cool little device. This is just great for enthusiasts and people who need the fast transfer speed. So definitely check out our review. Highly recommend this for anybody transferring large files. Just an awesome little drive.
Nice.
And then I took a look at a keyboard, which is still sitting in front of me. It is Cooler Master CK552, and Cooler Master released a CK550. And we have the CK552. And the only difference between the two is a slight color variation. And that one is, I think the 552, which we reviewed, is exclusively being sold in Staples and Best Buy, whereas the 550 is available like on Amazon and everywhere else. I don't know why they did that.
And the only difference is the color scheme?
The only difference is that this one is black brushed aluminum and the CK550 is gunmetal brushed aluminum.
Okay.
That's the only difference. So I don't know why they, I don't know.
so they can put a sticker on the box and then people buy it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, or they needed a, sometimes Best Buy, will say we need an exclusive product.
Yeah. Yeah. So they can put their, sticker on it. Yeah. So exclusively found at Best Buy. And then you're like, this is a limited edition. I better buy this.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but essentially both of those keyboards are the same. And the whole thing with this keyboard is that Cooler Master just wanted a no-nonsense mechanical gaming keyboard. Mechanical gaming keyboards in general, there's so many now. Everybody has one. It's so hard to choose. You have to do a lot of digging. There's a lot of keyboards that are totally overdone with features you'll never use. Lighting that doesn't obviously help. And just other features, and they're just bloated, it seems. So Cooler Master wanted to do a non-bloated, just simple gaming keyboard that was affordable. This keyboard is $86.99. It is a full-size keyboard. It does have that brushed aluminum top plate, which is nice. It makes the keyboard nice and heavy. It has Gateron switches, which I had never used before. I've heard of them before in a bunch of different keyboards, but I myself have never used them. They are just like a Cherry MX. The colors of them are the same. So Cooler Master offers this in red, blue, and brown. I have the red one here. And the one thing that I did notice, because I do have keyboards with Cherry MX red switches, is that these switches are lighter. Which I do like. This doesn't seem like a full red to me. It seems like a red and a blue, kind of, without the clickiness of the blue, which I like, which allows me, as somebody who games and types, to get in a real groove when I'm typing. I'm sure you know what I mean. It just feels very fluid, and you feel like you're typing without, like, you just feel in a good flow of typing, and that's what blues do for me. Mm-hmm. Reds don't do it as much, but no. This keyboard with the Gateron Reds does that. It's just a nice, it's fluid. So it is a good gaming keyboard. Besides the Gateron switches, you have full RGB backlighting. And it's per key backlighting, which is nice. And it's all configured with the software. So Cooler Master does have a new piece of software, which is called their Portal. Basically, you install the portal, and detects what Cooler Master accessories you have, and then through the portal, you can install control software for each piece of each gaming accessory, and you can link the say you have a keyboard and mouse, you can link the RGB effects together, which a lot of people like to do, and you can of course keep your firmware updated and all that through this. So the software is actually really good. The software is easy to use. It's not overbearing or anything like that. I was easily able to do, a per key backlighting on the keys that I use the most in games. There are a ton of effects. I think there's 20 total effects within the software that you can choose from, like breathing, the spectrum and all that kind of stuff you can do, which is nice. The only thing that was weird is there's no brightness level on this keyboard. You can either have the backlighting on or off. There's no brightness. I assume that can be fixed in the software. I you wouldn't think that there wouldn't be any brightness level.
That's different. Usually you get a few steps or full control.
Yeah, so that was the only weird thing with the RGB backlighting, but it is really good. All the effects are great, and it's easy to configure. Also, with the software, you can reprogram each key on the keyboard, full reprogram, but the one thing that I didn't like about that was that while you can set a macro, you cannot change, say I want to change my page up key to, open the Windows, just the Windows key, to switch it to the Windows key, or switch it to a Windows command, or say I want to open Photoshop with that. That would be like my Photoshop. You can't do shortcuts and you can't do Windows commands. You can't do multimedia commands, but there are keys on the keyboard for multimedia with use of the function key. So that, while I do like it because we have seen keyboards that you can't reprogram at all, the reprogramming is limited to a macro or another key on the keyboard. So just a little bit limitation, which I assume can be fixed within firmware and software, I would think.
Well, whether the software, they want to or not is the real question, because this is a lower price keyboard.
This is true. This is very true. But overall, I think it is a really good keyboard. As I said, the Gateron switches aren't bad. I almost would say I like them better than Kale, which I believe both of us have used before.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Kill Switch, so I can believe you find them to be better.
I like them. They have a different feel. You can definitely tell the difference. I was testing this next to a keyboard that had Cherry MX Reds. Definitely different feel. So, again, I really suggest people who aren't sure about Switch types to, if you can, go to the store, have them open it up and play with it, or order on Amazon. You have 30 days to return it and play with it for a while and see if you like it. But overall, this is a really good keyboard. It's a solid value, I think. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles of other $150 to $200 gaming keyboards, but it has the quality in the switches and in the design. It is a heavy keyboard. It feels, you know, it has good build quality, in my opinion, and it's just a good keyboard. And for $86, you know, instead of spending $150 to $200 on a Razer or Corsair, you get this keyboard and you put that extra $50 into more memory, into a better SSD, into even maybe possibly a better graphics card. Or instead of going, you know, you can get a an aftermarket graphics card instead of, you know, like a reference card. Yeah. So I think it's a good keyboard and I like it. I didn't think I'd like it when I first saw it because it just looks so basic, but it works really well and it's very fluid keyboard. So I like it. So yeah. So anybody looking under $100 mechanical, full size mechanical, gaming keyboard, this is a solid choice for you.
Nice.
So yeah.
Lots of stuff coming from Cooler Master right now.
Oh yeah. You know, it's been a while since we did a PC desk build.
It's not been that long.
I think it's been a while. I don't remember the last one we did. So for Case Mod Friday this week, we're featuring a desk build, which is where somebody has built a custom desk with a PC inside. More of the design goes into, I would say, at least for the most part, goes into the desk, which I think this desk looks pretty awesome. Yeah. Very modern, futuristic, has LED down the sides, looks like the LED panels down the sides, which look really awesome. Has an integrated subwoofer into the desk. And of course, the top is all glass, so you can see the PC inside, and has custom water cooling with non-hard tubing, which is something we don't see a lot of.
Yeah, usually we see hard tubing, especially on desks, because as far as hard tubing can be easy, it's far simpler with that much room to work with. You can just lay out your straight lines and stuff. Might be a future upgrade for this. I wouldn't say this is the cleanest tubing install, just based on the lengths of the runs with it. It's just kind of like, it's kind of flopping around in there, if you will. But still good. Still, I think that performance going on in there.
I really like the desk builds because it's like, this is my entire setup.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's cool.
I would love to have something like this. Just because, like, you know, you're just sitting there and then you just look down and you see your PC and you're like, yeah.
It is sort of cool that it's all right below you. We kind of like, when something goes wrong, you kind of like look over at your tower, you know, and you're like, what's going on in there? But like this you just kind of like look down and like, there it is.
Yeah, so it's really cool. And I assume, you know, at least you would design, I don't know how he designed it, but you would design it so that glass piece can be easily taken off so you can get in there too.
Yeah, I'd hope so.
Yeah.
Still seems like anytime you got to change anything, it's probably a pretty big hassle, but.
Yeah. But I like the desk. I think it's, like I said, very futuristic and just very cool and something I would love to have.
The desk design is really cool.
In my office.
I think he definitely could have gone further with the actual build on the inside of it. We've seen a lot cleaner, a lot more technical, a lot more complicated things put in. But it's kind of like it's a good place to see where you can start with a desk build, if you will. So it's a good place to say, oh well, you know, I can just start here and I can do that too, and then go from there.
Yeah, I think that this just design in general is really good, and for anybody who is competent in woodworking or something like that, you could easily build something like this, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then you can just, you know, and I think, you know, this could be a good way to do like your first water cooling build, because you have a lot of room to work with.
Tons of room.
In something like this too. So I think that's a plus of doing a build like this. But definitely check this out. I love desk builds, and maybe I'll do one.
I want to see it happen.
My problem is I like the standing desk, so like I need one that can go up and down.
Easily build a motor into a desk.
Yeah, that's very true. So, but we shall see on that. But definitely check this out. Very cool build. And if you're not into the desk builds, we have a ton of other builds and mods in our Case Mod Friday section, which we've been doing every Friday for 4 years, maybe. I don't know how long, but a very long time. So that brings us to the news. And the big story, you know, we talked about the NVIDIA RTX release last podcast. And now we have benchmarks that have been leaked from a YouTuber, because he put up the video early. Not sure why.
I was trying to think my way through that. I'm like, is there some way where you could click something and accidentally publish? Or like you were just tired and you...
You can set the publish date for the wrong date, obviously.
Yeah.
So you can do that. But in any case, people were smart enough to screenshot everything. Oh, yeah. And
real quick,
we have all those screenshots, and everything like that. And it covers quite a lot of games. It covers Battlefield 5, The Witcher, Wild Hunt, PUBG, Mass Effect, GTA 5, For Honor, The Crew, Far Cry 5, Rainbow Six Siege, Call of Duty, World War II, and those are all the games. Yeah. So what we've gotten here is a nice comparison compared to the GTX 1080 Ti, which the RTX 2080 Ti is the successor to. And on average, you're seeing 37.5% difference in average FPS, which is pretty awesome. If you think about it, from generation to generation,
that's pretty standard, isn't it?
37.5%.
Maybe it's a little high. I feel like we generally with graphics cards, not talking a CPU. We definitely don't get those jumps with CPU, but with graphics card, I feel like we do get towards the 30% gains. It's usually a pretty good step when we go to a new generation.
I always thought, I could be wrong at this because I didn't really look it up, but I always thought we would get something like, you know, like around 20%.
I don't know. With this, I'm so jaded on this too because the prices are so substantially higher, but like, I guess 37 is pretty good, but like, I don't know. I guess I don't know what was I expecting, like 50 or something like that. That's never gonna happen.
Well, you know, NVIDIA said 6 times with the ray tracing.
Right. Yeah. That's all dependent on what they're actually comparing and such too. So there's a lot of marketing in that speak. Yeah. It's a pretty good jump. I mean, this is not a cheap card though. That's the thing. I mean, you're talking. Do we have the resolution
I believe these were all, I'm guessing, based on this, yeah, these are all 4K.
Okay,
but yeah, I'm looking at a user benchmark, or gpu.userbenchmark.com, and we did the 980 Ti versus 1080 Ti in their gaming tests. On average 24%.
Yeah, so we're sort of towards 30-ish.
Yeah,
I guess if I stretch it a little. Okay. I don't know. I guess the other thing, too, is looking at it, I was expecting sort of higher performance, 4K performance. Like this 2080 Ti should be, like, a one-card 4K solution, I feel like, at this point. Because we're in the range where, like, as scary or early as it might be, like, 8K is something that we're going to be talking about for gaming pretty soon. Give it a year or two, we will definitely be talking 8K.
Most of these titles, minus The Crew 2 and Witcher 3, with 4K highest settings, are all going over 60 FPS. Except for Crew 2 and Witcher 3. So, you know, I know NVIDIA is calling this that, right? They're calling it the 4K 60 FPS.
But they're like just at it though. For I mean, they're over. But like, I feel like even 75 frames per second, like, that's not like crushing the game really. In like for like Battlefield 5, that's like acceptable basically.
I think that it's going to be, I still think it's going to be a while before we see a 4K, you know, especially like, you know, the monitors 4K 144 hertz,
right?
A single card that can do that, even 100 frames a second, I think it's going to be hard. Maybe we might see something closer to that with all the new game updates with this ray tracing feature. But yeah, I mean, we're far off from the single card. And as games get more and more intensive, they're going to be harder to do that. You know, so yeah, I like the performance increase. Again, this is pre-release.
Yeah. The question is driver too. What sort of driver? Well, we don't know if he's got, because he's obviously an official reviewer, so he might have been given what would essentially be the release driver.
Yeah, and we don't know. You know, are these games going to have patches that come out when the cards are released?
Right. With, yeah.
Right. Like we, yeah, it's a big thing. I like the performance. I still don't like the price. That's all I can say.
Well, more to come. We're talking an awful lot about like early first benchmarks that we don't know a ton about either. We don't know the system that this was in. Maybe we do. We just don't have it. I don't know. And you can't just take like one set of benchmarks either. So it's kind of like we gotta get a whole group of them first.
Yeah, I would, again, for anybody considering this, especially if you're on say like a 9 series or even a 7 series card, or even before that, you know, this is something that you're considering. Please wait till release date, especially when we'll have a handful, at least probably 10 to 20 reviews out there on these cards, just to see. And again, with the new ray tracing, it might be a while before your favorite game takes advantage of that. So it's something you also want to consider as well.
Don't just hop on because you're missing ray tracing. You might not ever be using
it. Yeah. So just, you know, and again, take all these benchmarks. While this is more of a solid benchmark from somebody who is an official reviewer, again, we don't know all the details yet. So just, you know, take all this stuff with a grain of salt right now. But yeah, so besides that, that was like the big graphics card news. We did get a release of two different companies releasing water blocks for the for the RTX series. So EK will be releasing a new series called the EK Vector. They look really cool. They've added this sort of glowing RGB section at the end, which I think is not overdone, but it looks good.
I think it's a big step forward for them to do something like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's on the... Is it on the inside? Or is it on the mount side? You got the cutout there, which made me think that it's got to be on the inside, right? Because that's where the power is at.
Or is that on the outside?
But then there's a notch on the other side, too. I thought for sure they were on the outside, and now I'm second guessing. No, it's on the inside, because that notch is for the power connectors.
Yeah,
that's the little hook on the end for where it's going to connect to the chassis. But yeah, it's a pretty cool little add-on. What is it? So the one is the acrylic, obviously. They're always doing acrylic. And that one has LEDs facing inward, which is probably the one to go with, because it's sick.
Yeah.
And then the other one is like a diffuse little end cap that with the black palm cover. So, and that just kind of like lights the interior case. I'm not sure how much that one's going to do, but it might end up being the one that's like super subtle and adds like the best effect. We'll just have to see. These are going to be in so many builds.
Yeah, I can't wait to see these in builds. That's what I was saying. So EK has announced theirs, and so has Fantex, actually.
Yeah, that was interesting for them to be that quick.
Yes. Yeah, Fantex actually announced before EK did, and they have their Glacier series for both the 2080 and 2080 Ti, which look good.
Yeah.
Again, you have RGB backlighting, which is compatible with, at least according to their flyer here, with MSI and Asus Aura Sync.
I think their stuff has been compatible for a while, so I would imagine that it probably will be. It'll probably work.
Yeah. So two water cooling solutions. Again, we'll see these in a ton of builds. And I can't wait to see more builds and mods based on those graphics cards when they become more available to more people. Yeah. So that is pretty exciting. And Intel news. We're getting closer and closer to the 9th generation Core series processors. The first big thing, which I know you, Derek, will probably be excited about, is that somebody deleted a Core i9-9900K, and there is a soldered integrated heat spreader, something that has been missing on Intel processors for a while now. And I don't know if you want to explain why it's important to have the soldered heat spreader.
Well, it's just the... Oh, and actually, maybe we should back up even a little more, because some people might not realize that the actual like cores of the chip are not the metal piece that you see on top. That is just a heat spreader. It's not actually part of the chip at all. It's attached to it. And it's attached with glue around the edges, and then it is thermally connected to the cores. Traditionally, it was connected with a melted solder, so a metal that was not perfect, but basically a perfect heat transfer. Intel started cheaping out on this. Apparently there's some money to be saved here, and they started using like a paste, probably a higher performance paste than some thermal materials that you use between like a cooler and the CPU and the lid itself. But honestly, looking at a lot of them, the nasty little white stuff that they have in between there, it doesn't look that great. So for the past, I don't know how many generations, do you think 4, 5? We've had...
At least 4.
We've had some pretty poor thermal performance due to just the use of that cheap TIM. So the move back to this soldered material is, it's good. It also makes me question, is there a heat issue here with these? Because we're getting a lot more cores in these parts. Or is it just, you know, to ensure that we have good performance? It could be any one or the other, but it is good to see.
The thing is, too, is that AMD, with both first and second generation Ryzen, as well as all their Threadripper parts, have the soldered integrated heat spreader as well. So that you have to think about that, and I mean, AMD definitely is taking some business from Intel.
Some? But yeah, by market estimates, that's a good amount.
A good amount. So, I mean, that's something to... And I think a good amount of enthusiasts have been going the AMD route for this reason. And, you know, just people who want more performance, because if you have that, you're getting better thermal performance, which means you can have a better overclock, 24/7 overclock, if that's what you choose to run. Right. You know, so... Definitely interesting. It seems like at least this part and the 9700K, both those parts will have soldered integrated heat spreader. So that's good.
Yeah, and it seems that Intel's actually even like trying to coin the phrase, or coin the little acronym, the STIM, STIM, soldered thermal interface material, which is not really necessary to come up with. Just
I think they're going to add that they're making that a feature of these new processors. So
should it just be part of it?
Yeah. But, yeah. Hey. So with that, somebody who had their hands on the Core i7-9700K was able to overclock it to 5.3 gigahertz on air. And if you look at the picture of the cooler, which these pictures are really horrible, but if you look at the picture of the cooler, it's not a big cooler. By any means, it's a single tower, single fan, not very thick, not very large air cooler. And this person was able to bump up the multiplier to 53X with a voltage of only 1.215 and have it running pretty good. it seemed like.
Yeah, it at least booted.
Yeah. And under air, which is pretty impressive. You know, again, we don't know if this has something to do with the soldered TIM on it, or, you know, this part is 8-core, 8-thread.
Yeah.
It's not 8-core, 16-thread. So again,
no hyper-threading.
That could have something. Yeah, there's no hyper-threading, so that could have something to do with it as
but
well.
But still, getting 8 cores to run that fast with it in that close of a proximity is, I mean, it would not have been that easy in the years past. I would say it's. I mean, yeah. that's impressive. So.
Yeah. So, and it's equally impressive on air. We've always talked about in years past 5 gigahertz on air.
Yeah.
So hopefully with this part it will be possible.
So interestingly, the voltage isn't even really 1.215. There's got to be headroom.
That's low.
There's got to be headroom there. Yeah. You know? I would say 1.25 is not even. I mean, that's like probably a 24/7 voltage.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see. We'll see how these parts kind of stack up when it comes to overclocking. But we've seen a lot of these leaked overclock stuff with these parts, so it could be a nice enthusiast part. We'll just have to see when they come out. Yeah. But pretty exciting stuff on the Intel side. So of course they have to shoot back at AMD. Yeah. So you know, as we always say, we like the back and forth. It just makes things better. So
if we can see some per core performance that's equal to what we have seen traditionally from Intel, which was still beating AMD, and the reason that they were still better in games generally. For the first generation AMD parts, Ryzen parts. Yeah. If we can see that same performance coupled with this, you know, 8-core part where you can get the encoding and stuff as well, this will be it'll be a great part, I guess. That's what I'm trying to get.
Yeah. Oh no, I 100% agree with that. I think that you know, if they're still going to be a leader in gaming, which even with Ryzen second generation, Intel parts still kind of managed to be a little bit better in single core performance. That with the more cores and hopefully they're thermally sound, I mean, it's going to be a good part. It's going to be a good enthusiast and gaming part. So excited to see when those come out and what that's going to be about. So, but we talked about it earlier. We were with our review of the Patriot Evolver drive. Samsung announced their portable SSD X5. And this is their first Thunderbolt 3 NVMe solid-state drive. Super small, just like their other portable SSDs. It is slightly bigger.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know if it's because the design inside is different, because inside of here is an NVMe drive, an M.2 NVMe. This one is said to have read speed of 2,800 megabytes a second.
Writes up to 23.
And write speed... 23, so super, super fast. They say it's 5.2 times faster than a SATA interface, 25.5 times faster than external hard drives. I'm guessing that's USB 2.0 speeds that they're saying. You know, so that you can transfer a 20 gigabyte 4K video in 12 seconds.
That's pretty, and that's obviously pretty good.
It's Thunderbolt 3. Pretty nice drive there. It's Samsung. I have their T3 and T5. That's the USB 3.1 drives. Those are really great. Yeah. This will come with software and it will have encryption, so you can protect your files.
Yeah, is it automatically built-in encryption then, or is that only enabled when you use the software?
The software is enabled by default.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So
it is 256-bit encrypted.
Yeah, it's 256-bit hardware encryption. So
that's actually really good, considering this is a professional device.
Yeah, so you have all that with these drives. Super awesome. I'm going to try to get one to review to let you know how it does, because I love fast, small portable drives.
Yeah,
we reviewed a bunch of the USB 3.1s, and we just reviewed the Evolver drive, which is... the Thunderbolt 3, so really, really cool. It's a cool-looking drive. I'm not sure if I like the design.
I like the old design better.
I like the design of the T3 and T5. It's just simple, small, but I think what they basically inside there, if you look at it, it's like an M.2 but thicker. So you have, I believe inside of this, it would just be like the Patriot one, where you have an M.2 on a PCB with a couple extra components. So you can kind of see where the M.2 would go. And then, you know, so yeah.
It's expensive though. That's worth noting.
Yeah. So the 500 gigabyte is 400 and the 1 terabyte is 700 and the 2 terabyte is 1400. So it gets up
there. Yeah, the pricing doesn't really scale very well either.
It does not.
It's kind of weird actually, because you jump $300 for the to double to a terabyte, and then you jump $700 for that second terabyte, which is exactly the price of the single one. I don't know. That's not great pricing. I think they got to work on that a bit.
I think, I mean, that's MSRP. I assume it will go down. Yeah. The T3 and T5 went down after they had been released. Okay. So it's just, you know, but it is super cool. I'm loving that. Like, you know, we've seen it internally with NVMe drives, and now we're getting to see it externally. You know, and for somebody, like I said, I shoot a lot of 4K video. This makes things so much easier.
Yeah. Anybody any creating professional content,
photographer, anybody creating content or hardcore gamer that is playing a lot of games, that even your Ultrabook comes with maybe a 512 NVMe, that's still not enough if you're playing a lot of games, especially games that are over 100 gigs each.
Yeah.
So this is just a great portable device for that.
Were you semi surprised that the limit was at 2 terabytes? Because I feel like there's a market for a larger capacity, even a couple of stack drives.
When you get into the larger capacity, you deal with transfer. There's only, I'm trying to think, the way the controllers work, you can only write to so many cells. So I don't know what controller's in here, but say like a controller's quad channel, which means you can write to 4 cells at once. So that's the limitation on a lot of this stuff. Just like, you know, you see like a 16 terabyte hard drive, there's how many platters inside. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's that type of thing. And then you would if you would have more than one NVMe with the cells on each side, the NAND on each side, then you run into heat issues as well.
Right.
So that's the only limitation. I think when we get better NAND and better controllers, we'll see that. I believe these are being built with controllers that were already out in the desktop NVMe space. Yeah. That's what the Patriot one was built with. It's just a trickle down from what's out there, building with an existing part and then enabling a Thunderbolt 3 controller on it, you know, for the connection and everything like that. So but still, it's totally awesome. And if you need this is something that you will, I assume you'd spend the money on if you really needed it. But in all honesty, I think a USB 3.1 is fine for most people right now. So unless you're doing something crazy people, like 8K video or shooting with a RED or something like that. But if you're shooting with a RED, you've already spent $50,000 to $100,000 on your camera with lenses and stuff. This is nothing to you. So still an awesome drive. I want to try to get one to review because I want to see how fast it is. Thermaltake released a new case, and this is part of their Level 20 VT. This is the Level 20 VT Micro, and it is a micro ATX, and it is tempered glass on 4 sides. So you have the front, 2 side panels, and the top. The only issue I see with this case, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but where does the air go from the front? I see some venting in the front, but I don't see a lot.
Well, the window on the front looks like it's got gaps on the side.
Yeah, it's
got a 1/2-inch gap on either side. It runs the whole length. It's got a square 2 inches to pull air through. That's perfectly adequate. I'm being super sarcastic. It looks very limited.
I mean, if you are running a micro ATX with 2 graphics cards, which you can do in this, You need a lot more cooling than this thing offers.
It, especially when their main advertising is that this is a full size build in a mini chassis, right? Yeah. I don't know.
I like the design. I do like the design internally. I still think we haven't. With that type of design was very popular for a few years ago, and a lot of companies have gone away from it with their micro ATX.
Yeah, cases. I also want to kind of point out that Case Labs just shut down, and this looks very similar to a certain Case Labs case.
This is very true, 100% true.
And they've already this company has been accused of copying Case Labs in the past, so I guess they're free to have at it. More or not, or they already had it in the works and they were just coming out with it anyways, but
yeah,
you know, I couldn't.
I do like it. I just, if I was building a high performance case or a high performance build, I would not build it in this just for that fact.
Yeah.
Unless I was running it without that front panel on at all.
I think that honestly they just got carried away with the amount of acrylic on it.
I mean, yeah, if you wanted the tempered glass, just take it off the front.
Tempered glass, yeah. Yeah, yeah. If, just put, I mean, put mesh on the front, that's fine.
Yeah, you're still going to see your RGB fan there.
Yeah.
Like, you're still going to see it through the mesh. Like, I don't know. We've seen this so many times where companies do get a little overzealous with their tempered glass, especially on front of cases. We've seen it so many times.
And the back panel, too, you've got the radiator mount there, which I think most people are gonna at least put a 240 all in one, right? So you're gonna want the venting there, but you've got it blowing straight into the glass or pulling right through the glass. Like, it's not gonna work out well for you.
Yeah, it's not. It is not. So
maybe we should review it just to see how bad it is.
Yeah, it just for airflow, it's just not good.
That's what I mean.
For a showpiece, it's great, and I do like the internal design as far as like a builder, but for airflow, it's just not there.
It's almost more than getting over all the tempered glass. It's almost like I'm done with it because it's just everywhere on everything from every company, it seems like, and it's just all right, we did it. Let's move on, right? We can go back to some of the things we were doing before with a different twist, that sort of thing. Give everybody a break. Let them have messy cables too. Jeez, all this back panel tempered glass, so much pressure.
I know, that's the worst thing about it. That's the worst thing about reviewing those. It's like, oh, I got to keep everything clean. Check out that case if that's something you're interested in.
One last gripe. Not that I haven't griped enough, but I don't like the top panel, the notch in the corner. It just rubs me the wrong way entirely.
You got to curve that.
That was a poor design choice.
Yeah.
So. Anyways.
So our final piece of news for this week is that besides the their Thunderbolt 3 drive, Samsung also launched the world's first Thunderbolt 3 QLED curve monitor. I love the Thunderbolt 3 connection just for its speed and what you can do with it. This is just an awesome thing, especially if your main system is an Ultrabook or a MacBook Pro. Do the MacBooks, like the normal MacBooks, have the Thunderbolt 3? I know the Pros do.
I thought that even the Air did, but I'm not positive.
Okay. Well, in any case, if that's like your main thing, but you come home and you're a designer, you just want a bigger screen, this allows you to have the bigger screen with a single connection. And I believe that connection will also power your laptop at the same time. So you won't need to plug in something else. Yeah,
potentially.
I believe that's how this one will work. And this thing, so this one does have two Thunderbolt 3 ports. Mm-hmm. So you can daisy chain as well with it. So if you have another Thunderbolt 3, you can just completely daisy chain.
So if 34 inches isn't enough, you can have 68, or is it up to 3, I believe? I believe you can do up to 3 off of Thunderbolt. I guess it might depend on resolution, what you can push.
Yeah, I know you can do at least two 4K displays. off of one Thunderbolt 3 connection. I know you can do that.
It's actually, pixel-wise, this has actually come up bigger than 4K, I think.
Yeah, this is an ultra-wide, yeah. So it's 3440 by 1440, 21.9 aspect ratio, yeah. Which was one of my favorites, yeah. For productivity and video editing and things like, yeah. That. But and this has their quantum dot technology built into it, which is amazing. But it's just like the simplifying things. You know, Thunderbolt 3 has become more popular than previous Thunderbolt generations, but I still don't think for what it offers, it's still not as popular as it should be, just because it's a single cable that can be daisy chained as well. And if you don't understand what that means, is that I can connect my laptop to my monitor. Say I have a Thunderbolt 3 drive, I can connect out of my monitor into that drive. And if that drive has another, I can connect out of that drive into something else. And you still get, you know, you can do that. And it's power and data delivery through one single cable. I hate cable mess. Oh, so yeah. This just makes everything just easy and, yeah.
Sexy, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It's enabling that awesome sleek setup with one single cable. And it just makes you've seen these docks and all this crap. You go from the office to home and you gotta reconnect everything and all this mess. With this, you just plug in one cable, and it's just super simple. So definitely really cool. I don't know if they have pricing released. I don't believe so. I expect it to be very expensive. Thunderbolt 3 is expensive tech, so
yeah,
and this they're display, expensive displays just in general, with, yeah. So probably close to, if not over, $1,000 for this.
Display. Oh, I would say at least. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a FreeSync display too. So if by some reason you're running an AMD graphics card, you can use
take advantage of that. Yeah.
Yeah, so that is our news for the week, and we'll talk about what we have coming up next week. I will be finishing up my review of AMD's Ryzen 5 2600X, and that is their 6-core, 12-thread mainstream processor. Total beast. It is just awesome, especially if you're doing a gaming build. This will give you all the cores that you need, all the performance that you want, and it's pretty affordable as well. So I will have that for you. I'm also taking a look at a rather small SSD in the Toshiba OCZ RC100. This is made to be an inexpensive, NVMe drive. The rated speeds are 1600 megabytes a second read and 1100 megabytes a second write, and just to basically replace that hard drive that you need to get rid of. So it's very inexpensive, and it's an NVMe drive. Nice. So definitely nice. If you're looking to upgrade, that's definitely one to consider. And then I'll be taking a look at some RGB strips. We're talking about RGB a lot. Reven has sent us their Twyla RGB strips, which are compatible with pretty much everything out there, from Asus Aura Sync, MSI, ASRock, and Gigabyte RGB Fusion. So you can connect those and be good to go there. And then you'll be taking a look at the Cooler Master Master Liquid ML360R RGB, which that's the 360 mil with addressable RGBs, right?
Yep. Pretty much sums it up. It's some minor updates to their new dual chamber pump that we saw last year, and addressable RGBs on the fans and on the pump. And yeah, it's a 360 rad, which is a first for them. And we've seen at least Corsair come out with their first this year as well. So we're moving to bigger stuff.
One thing I love about Cooler Master's AIOs is the big ass thumb screws they give you for the fans, especially when you're trying to install I have like the 120, and you're trying to hold it up.
Oh yeah, through the case into the fan or into the radiator. Yeah.
So that by itself is like makes these a winner. Like the ease of installation. It's like something that they thought about that was a pain in the ass. Any way you looked at it, screwing those in with a normal screwdriver.
Yeah.
It just sucks, like yeah. That. That was fun. Yeah. So with these addressable RGBs, that's through the software, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's through the, what do they call the, lighting control software, I guess. ARGB lighting control software. Yeah. Which I have messed with. I've actually done the whole testing. I just got to write it up. It worked pretty good. I mean, you'll read more about it, but it's pretty in depth.
Can you do?
Yeah.
Like if you go to the, they're going to ask you to do all.
You can. Yeah. It's okay. Literally everything.
We've seen in the past, especially RGB fans, that show the spectrum effect, yeah. But you cannot do the spectrum effect on the fans, so you want to make sure that that's like
possible. Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's addressable at every single level, like almost too much, you know? Like,
but I think
that's for the enthusiast.
There's
examples that you can download of, actually a couple come pre-installed of like, lighting set to music and stuff already, and you can do your own.
Do they have so you can download that? Is there like an online thing where you can download?
I didn't get into it, but I believe there's a repository of effects. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember Corsair did that when they first announced their RGB keyboards. Was like people made their own custom ones, and then you can upload it.
Yeah.
And then you could download it if you wanted to use it on yours. That's cool.
There's definitely like a whole page of that in there.
Nice. Yep. Very nice. Well, cool. So, again, that brings us to the end here. And we always talk about if we did anything cool with tech or anything like that. Have you done any cool tech or seen any movies or anything?
I did something. I know I did something. I just can't remember what I did. I don't know. What'd you do, Bob?
I didn't really... I've been testing keyboards and stuff, and I haven't really... done any tech stuff or seen any tech movies or anything. There hasn't been a good tech movie in a while, or like a geek movie, I don't think. You know, Ready Player One was like the big one, and that was kind of disappointing.
Even though everybody, Jack still loves it, he like raves about Ready Player One.
I think if you hadn't read the book, it would have been decent.
Yeah.
But if you've read the book, you're incredibly disappointed. And I read the book first, and I was disappointed, which typically happens.
Yeah, generally.
But yeah, so we haven't been doing that much. But we're getting into holiday and Black Friday and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll be getting into that stuff soon. So and a lot of products are being released soon. I mean, obviously, we have our RTX graphics cards and some other stuff. So. Pretty exciting time, getting into the busy time for us. So definitely stay tuned for all the stuff that we have coming up. And as I always say, we have a full list of show notes, which you can go through. And, you know, as we're talking about a product or we're talking about a news article, you can click through and get even more information. So until next week, catch you guys later.